Gentlemen, welcome to Fight Club. The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
Welcome to What the Nostalgia, the podcast where we go back and review movies from our formative years on up to our late teens. At the end of the podcast, we ask ourselves, were we looking at the content, the rose-colored lens, or is it as nostalgic as before? I'm Jarrell.
And I'm Jamel.
And this is What the Nostalgia. Jamel, go ahead and let us know, man, what we getting into.
All right, man. So as you guys heard from the beginning, against everything that should be talked about, we are going to talk about it. Today we have Fight Club. This was released October 15th, 1999. It was directed by David Fincher. For the cast, we have Brad Pitt as Tyler Durden, Edward Norton as narrator, Meatloaf as Robert Paulson, Zach Greener as Richard Chesler, Helena Carter as Marla Singer. Now, for the box office numbers, they had a budget of $63 million, and they grossed $101 million worldwide.
All right. Have you seen this before? Is it...
Yeah, you know what, man? This was actually my first time watching this film all the way through, bro. Like, literally, throughout my life, I always saw this on TV, and it was at a point where it was, like, in the middle of the film or towards the end of the film. So I always knew what the aura around this film was, but I never saw it all the way through. So this actual sit-down was my first time ever seeing it all the way through, man. So well, how about you?
I think this is, like, my second time watching the movie. But I don't think I watched it like back then. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't even have known what was going on, you know, had I watched it back in 99 when it came out. But this is another one of those 1999 films, man. I feel like I said something to you before where it's like this year was kind of, there was like a pattern going on with a lot of the films, and they were all kind of similar. Where it's a story kind of dealing with kind of being like unfulfilled, you know, tired, right. I guess, like tired of the stability, like just yearning for something else. Like there were just multiple movies made in 1999 that dealt with that same theme. And it seems like it's always the person's in a cubicle, just tired of the same old again. It's the Matrix. It's American Beauty, The Office. I feel like you could throw Truman Show in that. We reviewed that, even though that was, you know, from 98. But there's a lot of similar themes. But yeah,
it was, man, something in the water, man, around that time. Yeah, something in the water.
I think so, man. It's just certain years that got like something special about it, and 1999 was one of them, man. And you know, this movie included. So, you know, let's get into it, man.
Yes, sir. So to open this up, man, just like the last review, man, I got an opening theory on this film, man. And you kind of hinted towards it already. And it's crazy that these films, you know, came out in the same year, 99. But I truly believe, man, that this film, Fight Club, is basically the narrator was Neo in a different universe. I truly believe that, man. And I mean, you spoke on some of the similarities. I'm going to just re-go over those. You know, you got to look at the similar job setting. Both disinterested in that job. You know, they both seem to have... They were trying to escape, like, the mundane regularity of life. You know, trying to free himself, which the representation of Tyler Durden was that of him freeing himself. You know, fighting against his job, basically the system. Things that he kind of, you know, didn't really like. And in the end, he found out he was the one all along. So I truly believe this was the Matrix in another, you know, universe, man. And it came out after the Matrix. I think the Matrix was like in March, and this was October. So, you know, I mean, realistically, I know that's not, you know, really couldn't happen. But, you know, it's just my little theory on this, man. And you kind of spoke on it. So kind of to match that up and go a little bit deeper into it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you could see it.
That, for sure.
I mean, obviously, you know, they kind of got him dealing with some stuff, dealing with I forget what the issue was, insomnia or whatever. And I mean, he had different reasons, but it's like, yeah, somebody that's searching for something, man. There's a world beneath the world that we see. It always breaks down to that for these 1999 films. And I definitely see the correlation there.
Yeah, for sure, man. So, I mean, the opening scene, I don't know if you saw this or if it even came to your mind, man, but the first thing I thought of, man, when they opened the scene with him in the chair and then Brad Pitt, well, Kyler Durden is holding the gun to his mouth or whatever. The first thing I thought about was The Dark Knight, man, and my mind started working. I tried to do the research. I couldn't find out if that really what it was, but that scene looked very similar to the scene that they shot in Dark Knight. You remember when, towards the end, when him and Joker are in that high-rise building? It looked like the same type of building, the same building. I'm pretty sure it wasn't, because I'm sure it's buildings like that all across the world in America. But that was just the first thing that came to mind, man. It made me think of Dark Knight and that end of scene and that, man. I don't know if you noticed that at all.
I didn't really put that together, but I did hear... I heard a theory where they were saying that this was supposed to be that this could have been like a prequel to The Dark Knight or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I thought that's maybe where you was going with that. I didn't get all the details of how it was, but I just heard that theory before.
Oh wow, I'm gonna have to look into that after the review, man. I wish I would have saw that, man. I would have brought it up. I didn't even know nothing about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wild. That's wild.
You know. There's a lot of theories flying around out there, so.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man. So, you kind of spoke about it, man. This is a guy that is basically searching for something, man. He's dealing with insomnia, and even in the description it says he's also dealing with some sort of depression as well, which in certain cases I guess you kind of see that, but I just got to hit on, man. I don't know if you've ever experienced insomnia personally. I mean, have you ever dealt with that?
No. Okay. Not that I know of, at least.
Yeah, well, I got to admit, man, that's something that I had dealt with for a little bit, because switching jobs, working a day job for a long period of time, and then I switched to working night jobs, and then being over the road as a truck driver, sometimes your hours are all over the place. So it's certain times where I'm driving through the nighttime into the morning, then at certain times where I'm driving in the morning through the nighttime. So it was a period where I first started driving. I was like, man, I was struggling with sleep. Like, I couldn't really sleep that well. And it was terrible. It was terrible, man. I was buying, like, the NyQuil and stuff like that. And it just wasn't working, man. It wasn't working. So it took a little while for my body to get adjusted to the schedule that I was doing. And I feel like I got a ring on that now, you know, a handle on it now. But yeah, so insomnia, I can kind of relate to that in this film as far as what he was going through with that. Maybe not to that extent, but, you know, it kind of brought me back to that place when I was struggling with it a little bit.
Oh, man, I was just about to ask you, did you, you know, what was your, did you have a Tyler Durden that you could, you know, rely on or... You know what it was? What's that?
Not even get sentimental right now, but it was the podcast, man.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, the podcast, just having a passion for films and truly finding that passion of what it is as well. So for me, it was this podcast, you know, reviewing these films as well as writing. I got away for that for a little while, but got back to it, you know, so. You know, that's what it was for me, and it kind of helped me, you know. But yeah, man, yeah, like I said, this is not no therapy session or anything like that, you guys that's listening right now, but sometimes we want to kind of relate these movies to life as well, real life. So, you know, but yeah, that's pretty much what did it for me, man. I ain't even gonna lie.
Absolutely. You know, just as long as the podcast didn't have you, you know, doing anything, you know, on the illegal side or anything, like, I don't want... You know,
like plotting to blow up buildings or anything like that.
I don't want to find out any details now that you done put this out there. I don't want to find
out.
any deeper details where it's like, damn.
Nah, man. I'm transparent, man. Whatever you need to know, man. But yeah, this podcast, man, it definitely helped in that way. But yeah, those days are gone, man. Insomnia is gone, which is a good thing. But yeah, so I kind of related to him in that way, though, man. That's nothing to deal with, man. Definitely could get to you after a while if you don't figure it out. So,
well,
but yeah.
Well, that's great that you got over that. I mean, yeah, like I said, I don't have any idea. I mean, I've had nights where I couldn't sleep, but I don't know how deep insomnia goes. Is it like a long pattern where you say, or can you say that you had insomnia just after like a couple of nights of restlessness, or is it
like I said, I think it was, well, for me, I think what kind of triggered mine was the switching of, because I drive through different time zones as well, so I might be in, you know, on the East Coast where it's, you know, 8 o'clock at night, and by the time I'm done driving, I'm on towards like the West Coast or Mountain Time where it's like 2 or 3 hours behind that time. So it was a lot of stuff that, you know, I was, you know, gaining hours, losing hours, driving different times of the day. So I think that's kind of what triggered mine for a little bit. And it was just something I had to eventually get used to, which, you know, I eventually did. So, well, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know like all the causes or, yeah. You know, I'm pretty sure it's other ways you can get insomnia, but that was just mine.
You can catch it like a disease.
I ain't saying that, bro.
Scrape your arm on a rusty nail, and you know you kind of caught insomnia. But that's what's up, man.
Somebody with insomnia yawn on you, you get insomnia.
Yeah, man. Hey, look like those masks might be, you know, a little more important than we thought they were, man. I don't want nobody breathing insomnia on me. So, but that's what's up, man. That you came up out of that, you know, and that you because I'm sure that's, you know, not pleasant to deal with when you want to sleep and you can't. So,
that's right. Well, yeah, so let's move a little forward, man, in this movie, man. So we kind of learn about the narrator. That's pretty much what he's known as in this film, what he's labeled as. And we talked about his insomnia as well as his depression and things like that. And for his way to combat that, he starts to go to these different support group therapies. Like he's going to, I think the first one he went to was what, like a testicular cancer support group. He was going to different cancer support groups. He was doing that to try to find, I guess, an outlet to cure his insomnia. And I found that kind of, it was funny, but at the same time, it was like, man, like, I wonder if there's people out here that really do that. Like, they try to find comfort in any kind of way, even if it's not something that they're dealing with, you know, because he ultimately was able to sleep after he started attending some of these support groups. I don't know if you had or you noticed, like, anything within that kind of stuck out to you.
Yeah, that was a little interesting. I mean, I feel like I've seen it in different scenes where different TV shows, different movies where people are going to different stuff just for the fun of it, just to, I don't know, again, to try to feel something. Usually it's like a sociopath or a psychopath or something like that that's doing something to, I don't know, have feelings or whatever. But that was an interesting dynamic. I don't know. It almost got me thinking sometimes. I was like, man, I don't know. I might want to try that. You know, I might start trying some of the stuff that I'm seeing in some of these movies, man, just to see what it is. I mean, I'm sure if you get caught, though, like, you know, you're going to get shamed like crazy. So maybe not, now that I'm thinking about it. But he went there, going to them all different types of these support groups. But the one thing, I mean, I guess we progress in the story now. In one of these particular support groups that he goes, in comes this woman, Marla. And she's the love interest of the film, I guess, kind of, yeah. And it's like she's threatening ruining the situation for him. Like, if she gets caught, I guess he feels like he's going to get caught. But not only that, he feels like it's taken away from his experience, the fact that she's doing the same, because that's her whole character, basically. She's this nonchalant. I like those characters a lot of times in movies and TV shows, that like the free-spirited person that's just wandering, that's just somewhere, and they, you know, just, and you kind of like, why are you here? And it's like no real reason. I love those characters, I won't lie. So it was interesting. It was interesting to see that. But I got a clip, man, that I want to play, that is dealing with when he confronts her after he's confronted her, and he's threatening to expose her, that she's there faking, she's going to expose him or whatever. So now they're trying to come up with the deal.
Right.
They're trying to come up with the deal to continue on doing their thing in these support groups, getting whatever they're getting. And I just thought it was like, I felt like it was the, it was one, it was, I think it was my favorite scene in the movie, hearing them argue over what support group that they was going to get, you know, dividing it up, almost like they was like a divorced couple splitting up, you know, who was going to get the kids on what day. And, you know, it felt like that. So I just want to play it. I just want to play this clip for a moment.
All right.
Split up the week, okay? You take lymphoma and tuberculosis.
You take tuberculosis. My smoking doesn't go over at all.
Okay, good. Fine. Testicular cancer should be no contest, I think.
Well, right? Technically, I have more of a right to be there than you. You still have your balls.
Kidding.
I don't know. Am I?
What do you want?
I'll take the parasites.
You can't have both the parasites, but why don't you take the blood parasites?
I want brain parasites.
I'll take the blood parasites, but I'm gonna take the organic brain dementia,
I'm
okay?
Like that.
You can't have the whole brain.
That's so far, you have four. I only have two.
Okay. Take both the parasites. They're yours. Now we both have three.
So, we each have three. That's six. What about the seventh day? I want ascending bowel cancer.
The girl had done her homework.
No. No, I want bowel cancer.
That's your favorite, too. Try to slip it by me, eh?
Look, we're gonna split it, okay? Take the first and third Sunday of the month.
Deal. Looks like this is goodbye.
Well, let's not make a big thing out of it, okay?
How's this for not making a big thing?
Yeah, again, it was just one of my favorite scenes of the movie. And that dialogue of them just carrying on their life, debating over this, and without context. I think at one part of the scene, they're at the store, and the woman, the cashier, is just listening to them talk. And, you know, that's always a good scene when it's without any context of just hearing somebody say crazy stuff. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that was a crazy dynamic, man. I mean, to me, man, the thing that I noticed in that was, it was him that kind of went to her. Like, I don't even know if she cared that he was there at first, because she didn't know him from Adam. She didn't know, as far as I'm concerned watching this, she didn't know he was faking. So it's almost like he outed himself to her, you know, thinking that she was faking just for the simple fact she was in a men's support group when he met her, you know. So that's the obvious giveaway. But him being a man in that group, he could have easily gotten away with it. But I guess it did bother him so bad that he was like the only man in the group that had to confront her about it, you know, and it turned into this, you know, basically turbulent relationship, you know what I mean? But I gotta say, though, it's kind of crazy in the same way, because, you know, a little bit later in the film, you know, Marla's throughout this film, you know, until the very beginning, but about her character, what I found was kind of crazy. In the end, you find out that she had what, breast cancer or something like that?
I'm gonna be real. I remember him checking her for lumps, but I don't know if they ever said that she had breast cancer. Did they?
Yeah, I feel like they was hitting towards that, though, the way they set it up, because she had called him while he was at work and basically was saying they're going to cut off her breasts or whatever, hinting towards that she had breast cancer.
Oh, yeah.
So, which was crazy in itself because she was smoking throughout the entire film, you know what I mean? But in actuality, even though she was in the wrong group, she had more credence to be there than he did at the end of the day, you know, when you find that out towards, you know, like midway or, you know, kind of towards the end of the film about her character. So I just found that whole dynamic to be kind of crazy how they set that up.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I didn't catch it. I didn't really think about it. I guess she really did.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was a big portion of the film because, you know, well, the first half of the film, I'd say, because that was kind of how he was getting his therapy, his release, being able to sleep. And like you said, she came in the picture and kind of ruined that, which started a relationship with them. But moving a little forward after that, you know, that's when Fight Club was formed, started to form. Tyler Durden comes into the picture, who's pretty much the exact opposite. They're similar, but they're completely opposite at the same time. He comes into the narrator's life, and it's kind of showing him a different way to live, you know, the way he truly wants to live in a way. And that's when Fight Club was formed. So Fight Club comes into the picture, and that basically turned into his support group, you know, after a while, because he stopped going to those groups altogether. That was a big portion of the film after that, once Fight Club was introduced.
Yeah, he needed a little something more. Yeah, I mean, Tyler Durden, I guess, was an out for him, which he met. I think they were on a plane, and they kind of having they're having a little interesting conversation with each other. And I guess he realizes, you're like, man, you know, I mean, he's smitten by him like right out the gate, you know. It's like he wants to be cool with this guy.
I think he didn't even say to him, like, you're the most interesting person I ever met or something like that on the plane.
Yeah, something like a self-serving friend that I've ever met or whatever.
Because he was basically, this narrator guy was going through the motions, and everybody he met up until then, like, he felt like he was meeting the same people up until he met Tyler Durden. So, you know, it kind of stuck out to him even more, you know, in a way. But I gotta say, man, that you kind of hinted towards it a little bit, but the dialogue of this film, man, I just love the back and forth, not even just between him and Marla, but between him and Brad Pitt or Tyler Durden, as well as the other characters, man. I felt like this movie did a really good job as far as with the dialogue, man.
Yeah, they did. Like I said, I mean, the peak of it for me was between him and Marla, It was great.
Definitely was. So once Tyler Durden is introduced to the narrator, you know, that's when Tyler Durden is already reckless within himself. So basically the narrator starts to get pretty much
you really keep calling him the narrator.
Well, that's what he's listed as in the film.
Yeah.
I'm just being technical with it, I guess.
Yeah, you might as well call him something else, man. I don't know, but I feel you what you're saying, though. But
the other guy that isn't Tyler Durden, he didn't really have a name in the film. But I hope you guys knew who I was talking about. If you guys were confused, I was speaking on the other person, not Tyler Durden, but the other guy that we've been talking about,
Edward Norton.
But yeah, his real name. You know, I didn't want to do that, but. But yeah, so basically Tyler Durden is kind of influencing him in the ways that he lives, and to the point where Tyler Durden when you look at him, it's a method to his madness and everything that he does. And you get to the scene where he even has some encouraging ambition for a random, you know, character in this film. He basically holds this man at gunpoint to basically live out his dreams. I don't know if you noticed that throughout the film or if you had anything on that.
Yeah, that scene was a little interesting. I mean, do you think he went on to become that veterinarian? I mean, I think so. Like, if you
I think he skipped town personally and never went back.
Really? You think he said, you know what, forget that, I'm uprooting my whole life out of this town.
Yeah,
it's not worth it. I mean, yep. to be honest, I might would do the same. If somebody held me at gunpoint and was like, look, you want to follow your dreams, whatever you let's say my dream was to be a veterinarian as well, I think I would have skipped town too. Like, I mean, what if you failed? I think he said, look, I'm gonna check on in like 6 weeks. If you're not on your way to becoming a veterinarian, mm-hmm. I'm gonna take you out, basically. And it's mm-hmm. like, dang, what if you failed? Maybe he just wanted to see him try. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. That was a big thing with Tyler. Like, he wanted people to go after what they really wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? And by any means necessary, basically. I mean, like we said, holding a random guy at gunpoint, you know, he would go to those lengths to see somebody try to succeed in life. You know, so like I said, it was definitely a method to his madness, man, for sure.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, again, dealing with the method of the madness, like, you can kind of say, all right, I see some of the reasons why what he's trying to do. Like, it's kind of, it's not so black and white, you know what I mean? It's like, even some of his motivations towards the end of the movie are some of the stuff that he wanted to do. But yeah, man, I don't know. Like, he was really going to force that man to become great. Whether it was going to kill him or not.
Right. And I mean, you got to look at it too. It's not like this was somebody that he knew. Like, that's a different level. When you do that to a random stranger and you want them to succeed, like, this wasn't like one of his friends that he saw struggling and he was like, man, I got to push him to do his goals and get this stuff done. This was a random person, so he was willing to help anybody out, you know, in his own way, you know, which most people would look from the outside looking in, like, you know, you going a little over the top with this, man. You're a little too extreme. If anything, you might push them away from trying to go after what they really want by you doing that. But yeah, it was any means necessary with him, man.
I don't know. It's up for debate, man. You put a gun to somebody's head, they may become what they wasn't going to become otherwise. I feel like I would. I feel like I would become that. But
So hold on. So you wouldn't skip town?
Yeah. I changed my mind. I think if I had a gun to my head, you know, I think I would go ahead and take the necessary steps to do whatever it is that I want to do. But like, all right, no
and
more.
And then what if you start studying or getting into whatever it was, and you find out you really don't want to do that, then what? Do you skip town then?
Yeah, probably.
At that that's point. Next step after that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he didn't, you know, Tyler Durden doesn't want to hear that.
Yeah, right, no
stick,
excuses.
Yeah, you stick to it, and that's that.
No excuses.
Hey, but, I got one question, though, before we move on from that.
You seen
what's the movie from the 90s? I think it's Boys in the Hood. No, it's not Boys in the Hood. It's Menace to Society. You remember in the opening scene where the dude is like, I feel sorry for your mama. Ain't mm-hmm. that the same guy? Ain't that the same guy who played that role?
I think so. He did look similar because I was watching. I was like, man, I've seen him in something. I just couldn't put my finger on. So it probably was the same dude.
Yeah, I was pretty sure.
I was looking throughout the film. I was like, man, this dude looked familiar. I know I've seen him. So that probably is it, though. Probably was it. But I gotta say, man, I left out a few things, man. Just to go back to that, this is gonna even further go into the whole Matrix Neo comparison, man, because even through some of the lines, bro, that he was giving throughout this film, you know, I mean, he said in this film, forget what you think you know, you know, And we're getting ready to get into the ending part of, as far as, you know, the big part of this film. But I mean, even at that point, he's saying, my eyes are open, you know? So like I said, man, I truly believe, bro, that this was Neo in a different universe, man. I mean, down to the dialogue, man. Look, you gotta look at that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I won't argue against that. Like I said, we definitely see those comparisons.
Yeah, man. Well, to get into, I think, the biggest part of this film, you know, thing that I always knew about the film, but like I said, I never watched it all the way through. In this film, there's a pretty huge twist, man, in this film. So by the end of the film, or wrapping up towards the end of the film, that other guy slash narrator slash Edward Norton, whatever y'all want me to call him, finds out that he himself is Tyler Durden at the end of this film. The whole time he was Tyler Durden, the whole time Marla and Tyler Durden was having sex, it really was him that was having sex with her, you know. The whole time Tyler Durden was giving all these speeches, it really was him. And he ultimately comes into that self-realization that, you know, towards the end, that it was him the whole time. Which I gotta say, man, if I never saw this film before, if I didn't know that about this film, I don't know about you, I mean, but I truly feel like they pulled this off very well. Like, some films, they do this type of twist, and you can kind of see where they're going with it. But this film, some of the hints in this film are so subtle that you can really miss those hints to seeing that. Like I said, if you've never seen this film before. So I got to give them credit, man, on how they did this twist, man.
Yeah, I just, before I delve into it, I just want to hit on the big twist in general. I always feel like some of these movies would hit me a little bit differently if I was to have experienced it before I knew, because I believe, I'm pretty certain, even before the first time I watched it, I already knew what the twist was. Like, I had already heard it, too many years had went by, somebody ruined it. And, you know, I just feel like it would hit differently if I was to let it, allow that story to hit me and say, damn, okay, wow, yeah, he was that the whole time. You know, it's almost like, you know, I think I talked to you before about, like, Star Wars. Like, when I finally watched Star Wars, the prequels or whatever that was in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. and I learned that Darth Vader was Luke's father back in, like, 1999 as a little kid. But I didn't watch the movie till, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. So it had been ruined, like I said, like 20 years after, I mean, after I had already learned it. So it just didn't, it takes away a little bit from the movie. It does. It takes away a little bit from the movie. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I mean, so, you know, I had to deal with that. But going into the twist, though, of, you find out that, yeah, this is his, all that insomnia kind of, you know, messed him up. And now he has a alternative personality that he's dealing with, who really was the leader of this whole thing. Or he actually was that person.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's a, I mean... It's a little crazy. It's a little crazy, but this is the most interesting part of the film, though. I'm not gonna front. A lot of this film I didn't really care about early on. But when we got to that point, and it got to the point where now it's like, oh, it's a race against his own mind. It's like he certain things are set up. Certain things got set up through that other personality, Tyler Durden. And now it's like, oh man, what is he? I would have loved to see more of that movie, of him dealing with undoing all the things that Tyler Durden did. or him searching more, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like when they got to the point where he went to the police office, police station, I mean, and was trying to snitch on the whole program. He was trying to give himself up. And then, you know, you find out that the system, I mean, you know, the stuff that he built is so rooted that the police are in on it too, some of the police. And they were about to cut his balls off or whatever. Because they was like, yeah, man, you told us, even if you tried to stop it, to cut the person's balls off, basically. That part got interesting as hell. It was like, yo, how deep does this thing go? And like, it's like, who can you trust now? He can't even trust his own self, because his alternative personality is going to use it against him. That's crazy to think about, that like you got a war in your own mind with another person or whatever. That was wild.
Yeah, it definitely was. I think they ended it well, though. The way they ended it, it kind of ended all of what you were saying, because in my mind, the way I looked at it, by the end of the film, you know, when he first found out, he was trying to clear everything up and trying to, you know, stop everything from happening. But by the end, he just let go. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like he just accepted what it was. And it, to me, it was like I said, self-realization. Like, he found, he became who he really wanted to be. Because by the end of the film, you know, Marla is there with him. And he's watching basically the world burn down, or this world that's been created around him burn down. You know, to me, that was just a sign of them saying, okay, he's no more fighting, you know, trying to make everything right. He's just accepting, you know, Tyler Durden, you know. Well, basically, he killed Tyler Durden to, you know, he basically let everything go. You know, that's kind of how I looked at it. So, you know, I think that the way they ended it was pretty well done.
Yeah, we got to talk about the way he kills Tyler Durden. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I was like, so again, I understand what you just said about the self-realization and stuff like that, like he's coming to terms with it. But the way he decides to kill off Tyler Durden, which is him, is, he says, you know, he's trying to get control over his brain. Because Tyler Durden has him like almost tied up. He has the gun in his hand, but now, like I said, he's taking control over his brain. So now he has the gun. Ed Norton, his character. So to kill Tyler Durden, he puts the gun in his mouth and pulls the trigger. And even back then, I think when I first seen it, I was like, how? What, did he just kill himself? Which he should have been, because he shot himself, and it's like on his body you only see it, like, I don't know, it came out the side of his jaw or close to his neck, but on Tyler Durden's body, it's like the whole back of his head is blown out. So right. I was bothered by that. I was like, no, you can't get away with that with me. I'm sorry. You can't get away with that, dealing with me. Like, you just blew the back of your head out. You're dead. You didn't just kill Tyler Durden. You just offed yourself.
Yeah. So, I mean, I felt that a little bit, but I think I kind of took it for what it was, because just reading up on the film, like they say, which you can kind of tell throughout the film, it's a lot of satire, like, throughout this film, and I feel like that was a big part of the satire towards the end. You know, they basically did an exaggerated version of him killing off this basically demon in his head to basically find himself and just let go. So that, I kind of took it for what it was, as this film, you know, just a lot of satire throughout it. I think even in one of the descriptions on this film, they kind of peg it as being a satirical film, you know, filled with satire. So that's just kind of how I look at it. It didn't really take much away from me. I mean, I do realize he would have been dead, but, you know, probably, what, 99% of the time. But, you know, I just took it for what they intended the film to be, I guess.
It knocked off about a 0.25 rewinds for me.
Oh, you already getting into it. Okay, okay.
It knocked it down a notch. I was like, I got to take away some points for that. I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I understand what they wanted to do, but it took away because I was just bothered by it.
Okay, so you would have thought it would have. What would you have done though? Like, what do you have any suggestions on how they should have killed off?
I'm not saying I have the way right now on the spot, but I felt like they could have came up with something a little different, or you could have. Nah, I want to say that. I was gonna say they could have just completely committed to it, and he just took himself out. It took Tyler Durden out with him, but he would have needed to be a little more wicked, I guess, for that to all the way make sense.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, nah. All I'm saying is, it didn't make sense for that bullet to be out his jaw, but Tyler's head is blown off. It didn't make sense.
Nah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. Definitely do. But yeah, this was, I gotta say, man, that ending didn't really take away anything from me, man. I still enjoyed this film. Before we get into the ratings, man, and all that good stuff, I just want to bring forward some fun facts, or, you know, some stuff I didn't really know. As I bring these to you guys, as we bring these facts to you guys, a lot of the stuff I like to bring is stuff that I didn't know myself as well. So I didn't know this was a novel. This was first a novel by author Chuck Palahniuk, I think that's how you pronounce his name. And the reason or how he came up with the story is pretty crazy. He was beaten up at a camping trip. He was on a camping trip and he got beat up. And when he returned to work, nobody acknowledged his injuries. Like, he was just, everybody was giving the common, how you doing, how was your weekend type of stuff. And he basically gathered from that, like, that most people don't really want to engage in, like, personal matters. And they don't really want to, the core of people don't really want to engage on a personal level. So he became fascinated with that. He called it a societal blocking. And that's pretty much how he came up with this whole concept of Fight Club, and he wrote that novel. And he actually said after the film was released, he found that the film was an improvement of his book. You know, sometimes films make an adaptation of a book, and they say the film wasn't as good as the book, you know, most of the times, but the author himself felt like the film did a better job at bringing, you know, his book to life and telling the story. Kind of mentioned it a little bit, some of the subtle hints that kind of tells you throughout this film that Tyler Durden, or Edward Norton, is Tyler Durden / Brad Pitt's character. And it's very subtle. That's why I say I think they did a great job at this. And it's stuff that you have to go back to actually see, you know. It was a scene where the valet lends the car to the narrator / Edward Norton and Tyler Durden, Brad Pitt. And when he's addressing Mr. Durden, who is Brad Pitt, he's looking straight at Edward Norton's character when he does that. Let's see. When they're on the bus, it was a guy that pushes past Tyler, and he didn't say anything to Tyler. He pushed past Edward Norton's character, and that's when he says, "Excuse me." There was also a part where they're hitting cars with bats. And if you notice, Tyler's character hits the cars first, but the alarm on the car doesn't go off until Edward Norton's character hits the car. Let's see, what else did I have?
That's interesting. I mean, some of those things that you just said I didn't pick up on, but going back to the twist of the film, I think this is one of those movies that had I been watching it like as an adult, like now, I would have figured it out. I feel like I would have known. I know it's easy to say after, you know, after everything, but I feel like I would have looked at it and been like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the hard part about it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's the hard part about it. I mean, it's 2022 now. Of course, this came back in 1999, where maybe those type of stories wasn't happening that often. But going into what, you know, some of what you just said, like, you know, some of the lines you can look at and kind of tell where the, I believe at one point, you know, you got these double entendre type lines, you know what I'm saying? At one point he says, you know, could you wake up as a different person? Let me see. You got a moment in the film where Marla is talking to Ed Norton's character, and Ed is talking to Tyler Durden, and she's asking who he's talking to. Right then and there, I would have been like, yeah, you're not fooling nobody. This is clearly a Sixth Sense type of situation going on here. There was another point where Tyler Durden, I think the police had called Ed to let him know, like, the bomb that went off in his apartment, it was like homemade, and they giving him these details, and Tyler Durden is talking in the background as well, and he says something like, yeah, just tell him you're the one who blew it all up, or something like that. And that's supposed to be, you know, that's another one of those hidden lines, like, oh, it actually was him, of course, that blew it all up.
That same scene right there, though, for some audiences, they would look at that like, oh shoot, Tyler Durden really is plotting against Edward's character because he's the one that blew up. You see what I'm saying? So people could have looked at it that way as well. I can speak for myself. I say I really wouldn't have known, like, if I never saw this, if I never heard anything, because like I said, a lot of these hints, like the actual acting hints within this, was so subtle. Like, if I didn't look this stuff up, I wouldn't have known, like, the whole, you know, hitting the car with the bats and the alarm didn't go off when Tyler hit it first, like stuff like that. I feel like, I just think that they did a good job. It wasn't as obvious as a lot of these other films that try to do those type of plot twists.
See, I feel the other way. I feel like, yeah, sure, the bat thing, I probably wouldn't have picked up on that or some of the other stuff, but I immediately, again, the Marla Gibbs, where she asked who he's talking to, I would have been like, you gave it away. We're done. Like, you're Tyler Durden. Or Tyler Durden isn't there. It's a fiction. And Tyler Durden is never in the same scene. Is like, pretty much never there when Marla Gibbs. They're never all three together in the same joint. Marla Gibbs will walk away. Right. I mean, I said Marla Gibbs. I don't think that's her name, but I think that's another person. But Marla walks away, and then Tyler Durden walks in. Tyler walks out, and then Marla walks back in. Like,
You do have a scene where Edward's character is peeking in on them having sex, and Brad Pitt or Tyler Durden answers the door. Marla's there in the background. So they do throw some other stuff in there as well to try to throw you off the scent. So it's, you know, they do things to try to cover it up as well.
I understand. I just feel like I would have been one of the people who would have been like, yeah, I'd have figured it out. Do you ever try to figure out movies, you know, beforehand, before, you know, you get to the end? I'm not gonna lie, I'm usually like 0 for 25, you know. I'm always usually wrong, be like, oh no. But dealing with this right here, I was gonna say this for the end, I want to ask you, bro, like, after seeing movies like this and movies like The Sixth Sense, where you find out that twist as well, do you feel like you'll ever get fooled by a story like that again? The story of, oh, it was them the whole time. Because I don't feel like I'm gonna get fooled by that ever again. I mean, I go into every single movie assuming that it's the person the whole time. Even if it's a movie that, you know, that doesn't have nothing to do with nothing like that, I just go, and even if I already know the story, like, what's the last episode we reviewed? Independence Day. I'll go into the movie like, yeah, Will Smith's an alien the whole time. You're not fooling nobody. You're not getting me. But yeah, do you feel like you'll still get fooled by that?
Nah, I don't think so. I think I'm with you on that, because I think both of us look at films in a different way because of what we do, like because we review films and because we're so much into writing and screenplay and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of like we automatically are drawn to trying to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think so. Not to say that I get it right, but I'll be looking for those hints and try to, you know, dig deeper into the story every time I watch something like that. So I don't think I will. Like, a movie will really have to throw some crazy off the trail stuff for me to, you know, to not know what's going on. You know, I might not get the character right or something like that, but most times I feel like we would know kind of what's going on in the story in a way.
Yeah, I'll definitely say you a great writer. If you still fool me with the it was them the whole time plot twist, if you still fool me with that, you a great writer, because I'm expecting it in everything. Disney movies, musical, whatever, I don't care. Whatever it may be, I could watch anything. I'd be like, all right, where is it? They was dead the whole time. I knew it.
Just searching for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I can agree with that. But before we get into the ratings, man, I had one more fun fact real quick I'm going to bring up. This film, it received a lot of criticism from the execs. When they saw it, they were baffled by it. They said Brad Pitt and Edward Norton held a grudge against Rosie O'Donnell because she saw the film early and went on her show and told everybody not to watch the film because she thought it was so disturbing. And Brad Pitt and Edward Norton, in like the commentary of the film, they said what she did was an unforgivable act, basically. But yeah, the execs were kind of baffled by it, and they didn't know how to promote it. They went against the director's plan and strategy of the film because they already were fearing a backlash on this film. And basically the way they promoted it, they launched a big campaign basically centered around Brad Pitt. They basically thought promoting Brad Pitt is in this film was enough to get people to go watch it. So that's how they ended up promoting the film. And lastly, the director, he was kind of upset because they promoted this film during UFC and WWE programming. So they did that because it was Fight Club. But as you know from the film is much more than just about that Fight Club. So that's basically how they tried to boil it down to. So yeah, that's your fun facts for this episode. Pretty good amount in this one. Getting into the ratings, man, for me, I'm gonna give this film a solid 4, man. A solid 4. I really enjoyed the film. Like I said, this was my first time actually watching it all the way through. The only criticism I have on it, I feel like it was too lengthy, man. I feel like they could have told this story in less time than they did. So if it wasn't for that, I probably would have gave it like a 4.5. But because of the longevity of the film and it being kind of dragged out a little further than I thought it should be, I'm giving it a 4.
Okay, well, I get that. And I got my criticism again. It was a decent movie, man. It was a decent movie. Again, I told you, I felt like I really got invested when he found out that Durden was him. And like I said earlier, I would have loved to see a little more of that. I would have loved to see just a little more of that investigation going on with that, and that fight between him and himself. But I gotta go 3.75, man. I gotta take it down a little lower than you. And that's due to, I would have been right there with you, or right at the 4, but I told you, the gunshot scene, it took it down just a notch for me. I was like, you could have been a 4. But I hate to be that type of person, but stuff like that can, I don't know, it can mess with me in the movie and mess with the way I feel about it. So 3.75, it's still a good movie. Don't get me wrong, it's still good. I may come back to it, I don't know, you know, sometime in the future. But it's you know, hey, Brad Pitt, the acting is good. The acting is real well. Brad Pitt, Ed Norton, like I said, Marla, they're doing their thing, man. It was really good acting. I like some of the, you know, I felt like I saw a lot of comparisons in this movie. Obviously, the first, I mean, instantly Sixth Sense comes to mind. I don't know what came out first, but I know they're both in like 1999 and a similar plot. But plot twist, I mean. But also, I think that plot goes, the twist kinda is like in The Shining as well. I don't know if you remember in The Shining, in the end, where Jack Nicholson's character, he's talking to somebody, and the guy lets him know that he's been the caretaker all along. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but yeah, it's like, it felt a little similar to that. You know, we already talked on the Matrix vibes, but I felt a little more vibe, just the color of the movie. The color of the movie felt like it was in the Matrix. It definitely looked like it. That house that they were living in, that felt like that could have been one of the houses from that was in the Matrix.
You know what's crazy though? Not to cut you off, but you know what's crazy? What's as that? Far as the Matrix as well, they said during the sex scene with Brad Pitt and Marla, they used that same technology where the camera's kind of going crazy and stuff, kind of like shaking and stuff.
Okay.
They said they used the same technology they used in The Matrix in that film. So,
yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, you definitely see that. And then, you know, another comparison I felt like I saw was in the movie V for Vendetta. I know you remember the ending and how stuff is getting blown up. It felt very much the same as that.
I can see that.
You know, so... But yeah, that was it for me, man. 3.75. I might come back to it later in the decade.
Cool. Well, yeah, that's pretty much the review for you guys of Fight Club, 1999's Fight Club. Man, Jarrell, what you got on the docket for next review, man?
All right, we're going from this to the 2004 unlikely comedy, Napoleon Dynamite. We going there, man.
Wow.
Yeah. A film that kind of broke the Hollywood mold. No one expected it to become what it became. We gonna delve into that.
Man, that was... you know what? I ain't even gonna say it. We'll get into it when we review it. But yeah, I'm already thinking on that.
Alright, no problem, man. Yeah, we gonna leave you with a trailer that just doesn't really have no context to it. And just like the movie kind of don't have no context to it. That's it. We thank y'all for listening. Peace.
Girls only want boyfriends who have great skills. You know, like nunchuck skills, bow hunting skills, computer hacking skills.
How was school?
Worst day of my life? What do you think? Idiot! What kind of bike do you have?
It's a sledgehammer.
Dang, you ever take it off any sweet jumps?
What are you drawing?
A liger.
What's a liger?
It's my favorite animal. It's like a lion and a tiger mixed. It's got everything that I
desire. Why are you so sweaty?
I've been practicing some dance moves. I want candy. I want candy. Is Trisha here?
Who's that in my driveway?
That's my ride.